The views and opinions expressed by guests and co-hosts on Discover America podcast are not the views of Prince Nesta. Thank you so much for tuning in and selecting this podcast. In East Africa, we say Karibu Sana, which simply means welcome. In this episode, I want to discover American music. By the way, I come from Kenya, and in Kenya, we love American music. When you talk about the likes of Tupac Shakur and Biggie, everyone goes crazy. And the love for country music actually gets more interesting when you talk about the likes of Dolly Parton, Don Williams, Kenny Rogers, oh my days. Questions have actually been raised whether the Kenyan citizens support their own local music. Some artists' authenticity and originalities have also been questioned. Just listen to this song by Khaligraph Jones and Keshi. It's called Mikasa Sukasa.
No, nah, baby, I ain't mean that ish, but on the real, I really doubt if you can spit that quick.
I'm sick now, I get down, I run this down.
Man, I flow for 6 rounds, to love this sound.
For a gig,
nothing less than
that's proof to show how much influence the American music has on Kenyan music. To help me understand the good, the bad, and the ugly side of American music, I'm joined in studio by Dr. Albert Rudolph Lee. He's a professor here at the University of Nevada, Reno, and his particular interest is in classical music. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am assistant professor of voice and opera here at the University of Nevada, Reno. I teach voice, I teach vocal literature, I teach vocal pedagogy. Over my head, I hear music in the air. Over my head.
Dr. Lee also told me that he was born in New Haven, Connecticut, and he earned his PhD degree in vocal performance at the Florida State University before coming to University of Reno, Nevada.
There must be a God.
What type of musical instruments do you play?
The only instrument I would say I'm expert at playing is my own voice. Voice is my primary and my secondary. It's my instrument.
You cannot make this stuff up. There's only one place to catch it, and that's Discover America with Prince Nesta. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. My oh my, what a soulful ballad, what a voice. Intermezzo is the title of the track. It has a nostalgic feeling on me, I'm telling you. And I'm actually honored to host the artist right now on Discover America with Prince Nesta. I'm Prince Nesta. Thanks for tuning in, hope you're enjoying yourself right now. Dr. Lee, at what point did you decide to do classical music? Was it the genre that you first fell in love with?
My first love in music is gospel music.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found, was blind, but now I see.
Wow, so did you like used to sing in church?
I grew up in a Methodist church in New Haven, Connecticut that had a gospel choir, it had a senior choir that sang anthems, it had a youth choir that sang slightly more contemporary things, it had a male chorus that did quartet music. And so there was a lot of variety within the genre of gospel music that I grew up on. So that was my first love. When I went on to middle school and high school, I was exposed to American musical theater and really enjoyed that, but also found that it didn't necessarily fit my temperament. Also, it didn't necessarily fit the fullness of my vocal capacity. And so after my senior year in high school, I was exposed to more classical music. I decided to pursue it in college, and it's been sort of full steam ahead since then.
The man has mastered the craft of delivering music through his vocal cords. By the way, shoutouts to my producers Michael Dugan, Olivia Caboni, and EJ Papa. They actually hit the streets just to find out what Americans listen to. This is what they found out.
My number one is probably rap and hip-hop, and then also really into like 60s, 70s, 80s, like soul music, and then like old school rock and roll too. Favorite artists would be A Tribe Called Quest, Earth, Wind & Fire, and Notorious B.I.G.
I really like kind of jazzy music, a lot of alternative stuff, like Arctic Monkeys is a lot of my favorites. But then I switched to like Michael Bublé. I also like a lot of like coffee house music, stuff like Beats Antique and Thievery Corporation, just like nice chill stuff. So it's kind of varied. I really enjoyed Muse also. That was one of my first bands I ever really enjoyed. So that's something I like. And then just the classics like Frank Sinatra, stuff like that.
I have a pretty broad taste in music. The one I like the most, probably like rap and hip-hop. I like jazz, especially for homework and stuff like that. Favorite artists, I'm going to go with probably Kendrick Lamar, Kanye West. I mean, really cliche answers here. And then Action Bronson, because Action Bronson is my boy.
I listen to pretty much everything. I really like listening to alternative, and I do like country and kind of, yeah, everything. Oh, I love, like, the Dirty Heads, and I love Panic at the Disco. I'm all over the place, so.
Anything but country, really. 60s, 70s. The Beatles, the Beach Boys, Queen, kind of all over the place.
Hope you're enjoying right now on Discover America with Prince Nesta. I'm joined in studio by Dr. Albert Rudolph Lee, and we are discussing matters American music. Dr. Lee, what comprises of the American music identity? Is it an amalgamation of different cultures?
I would say America's musical identity is as sordid and convoluted as American identity itself. And so you can't talk about American music culture without talking about race. You can't talk about American music culture without talking about gender. You can't talk about American music culture without talking about the commodification and corporatization of music.
Who are some of the singers that you personally look up to?
For me, as a classical singer, there are so many people that I look to for inspiration, and names that I have had to learn along the way that I did not know existence. For example, 1920s black tenor concert singer Roland Hayes, that, you know, many people, is not a household name in America, but he's certainly a great influence, especially for me as a tenor. Another American tenor, black tenor, who sang at the Metropolitan Opera, George Shirley, who taught at the University of Michigan, still teaches at the University of Michigan, and has had a profound impact on me and many black classical singers, because we have these people to look up to. And those are two names that I mentioned that are not necessarily household names outside of the classical music world. And then we go to the names that people do know, like Leontine Price and Kathleen Battle and Jesse Norman, and some of these names that are women who have been at the top of the classical music business.
Such a melodious classical rhythm by Dr. Lee, playing right here on Discover America with Prince Nesta. Dr. Lee, what role did slaves and the Native Americans play in regards to American music?
Czech composer Antonín Dvořák was the artistic director of the American Conservatory for a time at the turn of the 20th century. And he puts out that as American was trying to find its musical identity, he made the statement that America's musical identity could be most easily found in the music of Native Americans and the music of of former slaves, the spiritual melodies. And so when he wrote his Symphony of a New World,
yeah,
you see aspects of sort of Native American sort of musical ideas, mm-hmm, as well as spiritual themes.
Amazing stuff. It's actually very interesting to find out about the history and background of American music. But do you want to discover where American jazz came from? Stay tuned, Dr. Lee and I are gonna be talking more about that. But before that, let me play Dizzy Mae's track. The track is called The Demon Inside Your Head. Enjoy.
I tried all I could, I even lost myself.
Oh, absolutely fantabulous. There's just something about jazz that makes my body temperature to rise to about 120 degrees, I'm telling you. Welcome back. It's Discover America with Prince Nesta. I'm Prince Nesta, joined in studio by Dr. Albert Rudolph Lee. I'm trying to discover everything in regards to American music. And right now, let's talk about jazz. Dr. Lee, if you listen to the jazz of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, it's quite different from what's being played right now. What changed?
The history of jazz in America, if we look at where jazz is right now, because jazz has now been made an academic subject, an academic art form, it's still being performed commercially, but it is there. Most music departments have a jazz program.
Mm-hmm.
And if we examine the people who are leading academic jazz programs around the country, they are not black people. And so it's another site where mode of musical expression has, in a sense, been taken from us and appropriated for, you know, another's use.
Are you just saying this to be critical?
I don't say that to be critical or, you know, in anger. It is what it is. In too many instances, jazz programs have not hired faculty of color,
mm-hmm,
and don't actually have students of color in them. And so jazz has certainly changed into something different from what we understand its origins to be.
Playing on the background right now is the hip-hop beat instrumental produced by Passion Hi-Fi. Such a lovely beat, right? Playing right here on Discover America with Prince Nesta. Dr. Lee, you're also witnessing changes in the beats and the music element of hip-hop, right? What's causing this change?
Again, with corporatization, even hip-hop, which has its roots in the black community, is at its foundation, very much a black art form, has all of a sudden, and it's certainly not sudden, but in the last, decade to two, mm-hmm, become an international phenomenon and therefore a multicultural phenomenon. And so it's another site where people can take something created by black people, create something else out of it, and make money off of it. And certainly there are certainly black artists who have made a lot of money off of hip-hop, but it's certainly gone in a different direction. And I think it's really, really important to always remind people,
mm-hmm,
that the origin of hip-hop is about the telling the stories of marginalized black communities, mm-hmm, in America at its foundation. And as it's grown, people have used the form to sort of speak to their own marginalization, in their own way.
There's some criticisms about American music. Rap and hip-hop have actually been criticized for degrading women and calling women all sorts of names. At the same time, it's also been criticized for spreading violence among the youths in the community. Let me play you a clip courtesy of the Huffington Post.
Lyrics of popular music have grown more violent and depraved.
I've said from the beginning that this music is drug-driven, greed-driven, and violence-driven.
Rap music.
Gangster rap songs that debase women.
Degrades the value of life.
Promotion of drugs and violence.
Violent, pornographic.
Derogatory lyrics about women and minorities.
Explicit sexual or violent lyrics.
Racism and inciting violence.
The get rich or die trying attitude that you see in hip-hop.
Teenage pregnancy, sexually transmitted diseases,
teen suicide, casual drug use.
My mother used to take washing powder and wash out our mouths.
This offends me as a black woman, still calling us hoes, bitches, and sluts. It's calling us niggers.
and now it's also defaming our faith.
Dr. Lee, what's your reaction to rap and hip-hop criticism?
I think it is peculiar when those criticisms are levied against hip-hop that it is violent and that it is misogynistic. I think it is peculiar that those criticisms start, and if we travel back, you know, to the 80s when hip-hop was really taking its place as a formidable power source for the voices of Black people, the people who were criticizing it were some of the political leadership of our country. And so for a country that has been institutionally misogynist and institutionally racist and institutionally violent against peoples around the world, the criticism that hip-hop is violent and misogynistic is about as hypocritical as it could be. And I would dare say that the violence and the misogyny inherent in some in hip-hop at the time was reflective of what was going on in communities. And I think the emergence of women in hip-hop and women being able to tell their story and women being able to speak for themselves begins to tell a broader picture. And so we get, in a sense, the diversification of the art form and a broader story of what's going on in the Black community. I think no one is above critique. Mm-hmm. No art form is above critique. And so if you're not willing to get into communities to talk about, you know, why there might be violence in these communities and the effects of poverty and the effects of lack of resources and the effect of lack of hope in communities, if you're not going to have that discussion where it's about solutions, mm-hmm. then I'm not terribly interested in listening to your critique, and I put very little credence in those types of critique.
So are you saying that there's nothing that can be done for these artists and some musicians to tone down on the derogatory language? Or what do you think is actually the solution to artists using proper language in their music?
As an artist myself, I don't enjoy being dictated to by other people about how I express myself and how I share my journey and how I tell my story. And so I would not in any way want to tell another artist how to tell their story and what aspect of their story to tell. What I would say to any artist is to really examine within themselves why they need to say what they're saying, and if what they're saying is in any way edifying or upbuilding. And not all art is meant to edify and build up. Sometimes art is really about expressing what's on one's mind and what's in one's heart. And sometimes what is on one's mind and what is in one's heart is not necessarily so wholesome. And that's a part of art. But I think self-reflection is really, really important. And that if you want your own marginalization to cease, then you have to begin within. If I don't want to be marginalized, mm-hmm. I have to look at the ways that I might marginalize others with my speech, with my actions, with the political positions that I espouse. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would encourage artists to self-reflect. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't encourage artists to not say something that they feel like they need to give voice to.
Fuck, now I have to pull my skirt down. It keeps on riding up. They just keep staring and catcalling. The kind get tries to grab me. And why the fuck do you have to touch me, harass me? That's not foreplay, that's child's play. Cheki, ushamba mekufunika macho. You're not macho. You don't know what's good, what's bad, what's right, and what's wrong. But I'm willing to teach you. I'm ready for you. I'm ready for you. I'm ready for you.
It's such an interesting jam, actually, if you ask me. It's actually done by an artist called Rafiki from Kenya. It's called Mapambano. It basically talks about how masculinity affects the feminine existence. Playing right here on Discover America with Prince Nesta. I'm trying to find out the good, the bad, and the ugly in regards to American music. My producer Michael Dugan actually hit the streets to find out whether Americans subscribe to music from other parts of the world. And here's what we found out.
Yes, I was in Germany for a month, so I spent a lot of time listening to their music, even though I had no idea what they were saying.
Yeah, UK, especially like the London rappers like Skepta.
Yeah, there's actually a big rap scene in the UK, and they have really cool, like, different sounds coming out of there. And then listening to rap from other countries and other languages is cool. Even though you don't know what they're saying, you can hear, like, the flows. So it's kind of cool to listen to that stuff, yeah.
I don't know any of the artist names, but I listen to, like, some French rap. I really enjoy that. And then, I don't know, just kind of whatever comes on too.
French rap is also really cool, and then African. I know a lot of like music now, especially like EDM and stuff like that, or into like take Afro. It's called like Afro beats or something like that. So I'm really interested in that too.
Yeah, I have a best friend who is Ghanaian, and I've heard a lot of Ghanaian music, Nigerian music, and then I also took a couple years of Italian. So Italian music is really nice too.
Are you aware of any African music?
I'm not. I 100% am a product of a musical structure and a musical education system that essentializes European music, and have committed, you know, my professional life to performing the opera. And so my knowledge of African music is non-existent. And so part of why I'm here today is so that people begin to understand that it's not simply that Americans, and specifically Black Americans, are either lazy or uninterested in African music. I think part of it is misplaced and stolen identity. For many Black Americans, finding identity in Africa specifically is tricky. Many of us have no idea where our people come from. Mm. We have no idea where our roots are. And even if we have an inkling of where those roots are, it's hard to find that connection when those connections have been largely cut off from us. And it would take, you know, a fair amount of investigating and research and study to rediscover these connections and find yourself in a music and in a people that you don't necessarily feel like you know. We can also talk about commercialization.
Yeah.
What comes on our radios is often what we listen to. What shows up at the top of the playlists on Spotify and on iTunes and in other streaming services is ultimately what we listen to.
Reggae music always makes me feel so nice. That's the beat produced by Dub Easy. It's called the Free Up Instrumental, playing right here on Discover America with Prince Nesta. I'm Prince Nesta, and right now I'm trying to discover everything as far as American music is concerned. I'm joined by Dr. Albert Rudolph Lee, voice opera artist and also the director of voice opera at the University of Nevada, Reno. Thanks so much, dear listener, for taking your time to listen to this podcast, right? Tell us what you think. Give us your feedback at Prince Nesta. That's my Twitter handle, and Prince Nesta, that's my Facebook page. Prince Nesta Radio, that's my Instagram page. Let's talk. If an artist from any part of the world listening right now and you'd like to penetrate to the American music market, what would be your advice to them?
I think art, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder, is in the ear of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
And I think artists have to be true to who they are. For me, as a classical singer, I don't try to be something that I'm not, and I don't try to do something that I can't do in an effort to be seen and heard. I put the music out that means something to me. I put the music out that speaks to my heart and speaks to my temperament. And I let my gift make room for me. And so I would say, first and foremost, to artists who might be listening, I think you have to do what's in your heart and find communities of people to share it with. And with social media, there's all sorts of ways that we can share music with one another, and we can share our art. And so I'd say, find Americans who you can share your music with. And even if that is some random individual that you meet on Facebook, or some random individual that you connect with on Instagram or Twitter, or Snapchat for that matter, to say, here, please take a listen to this, and if you like it, share it with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, the potential for your music to get around grows. I think artists also have to understand their own art and be able to explain it. Mm-hmm. Because if we hear your music, we may not really get everything that you're trying to say. And so sometimes we need a little contextualization so that we can understand it. And the reason I say that is, as an opera singer, singing in French, German, and Italian primarily, if you don't speak those languages, it can seem like a waste to listen because I don't understand all the words. Mm-hmm. But with a small explanation about the scenario and what's going on and what is being said and what is being communicated, any art form can become incredibly powerful if given proper context.
Dr. Lee, the way music is consumed, especially in Kenya where I come from, you'll find that reggae is associated with a particular class of the community, normally the sufferers in the community. Although these are just perceptions, might not necessarily be true. Jazz is actually associated with the elites in the community, same to classical music. At the same time, the youth will tend to lean onto local Kenyan music, R&B, hip-hop, blues, and rock, techno, trance. The old will tend to listen to country music. Is there a set of music that distinguishes the people in the upper echelons of the American society with those in the lower class?
I think some of those perceptions can be the same. I'll speak for myself.
Yeah.
I am the child of a postal worker and the Jamaican immigrant who worked in factories. I am a product of a working class family, certainly not academically or educationally elite, my roots. But I came over into the world of opera to discover an absolute adoration for this musical form that is considered to be upper class. I will say this: art is for everyone. There is some art that takes a little bit of preparation to understand, and it takes a little, maybe some education and some context to fully grasp all of it, but art is for everyone. I would challenge anyone with these kinds of preconceived notions to just take a step outside of their box. And so this opportunity for me is I'm looking forward to musically taking a step outside of my box to explore some other music, to sit and listen to some other music that is not the music that I work on every day here at the university and in my professional performing career. And I would encourage everyone who is listening, if there's something that you've not heard before or a form of music that you have not been interested in before, take a moment and attempt to understand and expose yourself, because what you will do is begin to see how other people are moved and how other people are affected by different art forms. And if we can start to understand each other a little better, we start to create a world where we can respect each other's taste a little more and stop the essentialization of one form over another because it's quote unquote better.
Allow me to play one of your amazing performances. And you were performing this at the University of Nevada, Reno. I'm actually playing it from your website. That's albertrlee.com. And you are singing the American National Anthem. This playing right here on Discover America with Prince Nesta. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
So proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave?
Wow, that's absolutely amazing. I'm actually out of words to describe that incredible performance. If someone is looking for you, how can they find you? Are you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter. It's just Albert R. Lee. Same on Instagram, and actually you can find the same on Facebook. So I'm definitely a social media head that way.
I'm sure that by now you already know why the man's performance has been described as vocally sumptuous. Thank you so much for coming through. It was indeed a pleasure to host you. Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in and listening to this podcast. I'm Prince Nesta, signing out on Discover America with Prince Nesta. Thank you so much. Till next time. Bye for now.